You're listening to Beating Goliath, the blood, sweat, and tears of healthcare startups. In each episode, we interview a founder or an executive and find out how they're punching above their weight and winning. We'll also have cameos from angel investors and VCs. So if you want to get juicy insider tips, be sure to tune in. And here's your host, tech entrepreneur, advisor, and angel investor, Joyce Tang.
So today I'm very excited to be talking to the CEO of Richify, Zeal Jadhia. Zeal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So the first time that I learned of Richify was actually through the former CEO of the company. And most recently, I understand that you have been selected to lead the company. And so I'm very excited to see whether there's any direction changes or, you know, new developments in the company. And more importantly, the fact that you are transitioning from the CTO role to a CEO role, that's quite an interesting journey in itself as well. And I think that could be a journey that is fascinating to other technical founders. So I would love to find out the things that have happened in the past couple of months and what brought you to this position. So to start, would you tell us a little bit about Richify and what it does?
Sure, be glad to. So Richify empowers businesses to connect with their customers through multiple communication channels all in one platform. Now, the reason we do that is because you might already be using some channels such as phone and email. We bring that under one umbrella, make it easier to use, but also give you other ones you may not just have at your disposal right now. That includes SMS messaging, live chat, HIPAA-compliant messenger. All of these things are different channels that just give businesses more opportunity. But just to boot, on top of that, we allow for a whole collaborative team management layer on top of that, making sure that you drop the sticky note problem, you have effective communication, and everything is taken care of, whether it's internal or external.
And yourself, you were the CTO from what time?
So I was the CTO. I actually joined Richify about a year back, and I just took the CEO role, somewhere around end of January.
Oh, I see. So from the CTO to the CEO transition, let's go over what first motivated you to join Richify as their CTO.
Well, what happens is every once in a while you reach a point where you're thinking, let me kind of see what's out there and maybe there's just a different thing that kind of excites you. So I was a CTO previously at another company and was there for several years. It was great. But I think I just reached a point where I wanted to try something new. Also, the company was a little bigger. It'd be nice to roll up my sleeves and get back into coding a bit too. I kind of go back and forth, sometimes more managerial, a little more development, back and forth, just to kind of stay fresh. So Richify was on my radar. There was a handful of companies I was talking to here in the San Diego area, and it was just really exciting. I've never been in the healthcare space before, never delved into communication, and the team itself was really awesome. So all in all, it just seemed like a great choice.
And I understand that you were not born in the United States. You're an immigrant yourself, right?
Yeah, my parents actually are from India, but when I was born in Paris, France. Was there for a year or so I don't have that lovely accent. But I do have a little bit of the history through my parents, who tell me all the great stories of me there at all the landmark sites. I don't remember it, but yeah, I came over here to California when I was about 1.5 years old.
And when you're here, you have been working in technical roles. So you mentioned you were working at a slightly larger company than Richify, and now you're fully immersed in the startup experience. I mean, it certainly is very exciting when you get to roll up your sleeves and you're in the trenches again, right, with your fellow coworkers or comrades or whatever it is, and then you're just, you know, fighting the good war. So what was the major difference that you felt, and was it what you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, no, the journey was interesting. I mean, like you said, I've always started at a larger company and I've just worked my way to smaller. I know in college I had a period where I worked at Intel and IBM. After that, I actually really wanted to get into robotics. So I got into a company that did unmanned aircrafts well before drones were a popular thing. And that was a great experience. 8 years, 9 years, worked my way up from a developer to a lead, another role they call a control account manager, where you're in charge of a huge fund. And it was very, very, interesting to me to see both the development and the programmatic side. That's really where I got a first taste of some of the business aspects, working with customers, worrying about budget, you know, dreading scheduling issues. But after that, you know, I had a side project that just evolved into its own company. And that company just kept growing through the help of my business partner and myself. I started technical, he was sales, and you know, him being in London, we had to wear many hats and all hats. That's where I got my first exposure to every aspect of a business. That was a great experience. That company grew, got to sell that off, take a year off. And that's kind of where I landed at the previous startup. And then after that, Reachify today.
Transitioning from CTO to CEO, what unique perspectives do you think you're bringing to the table?
That's a great question. And I think, you know, this is a bit of a generality, so hopefully I don't offend anyone out there. But sometimes, you know, it's a different perspective because you already have within you the capacity to understand what it takes to develop an aspect, whether it's a major feature or it's something else. On top of that, you might also have a little bit more of a background into, you know, a different way to run a team. A lot of startups and a lot of development, you know, teams out there, period, whether you're large or small, they know agile. Agile is something everyone's adopted. People moved away from what was called waterfall, and that just allowed them to be a little more nimble, dynamic, and responsive to feedback. One thing I like to do, and I've always appreciated, is, you know, let's take that beyond development teams. There is something to be said about running your business in an agile method, right? You know, you're willing to test and fail frequently. You listen for feedback. You would hope to have a product roadmap. Everyone wants the roadmap, but there's a difference between a roadmap that goes out a year and a set of priorities and a closer roadmap, which of course is prone to some changes as you kind of adjust to what you're learning. The same could be said about sales. And I think everyone kind of sees this and does this, maybe even without knowing. You know, you might test some messaging when it comes to marketing, when it comes to a sales pitch, cold call. It may work, it may not. And you might have to go to the whiteboard, test it, do the whole scientific project, and then just come back to saying, hey, the scientific process has told us we might need to try this, A/B test it, see what happens, and then keep going and inevitably just review it and see what makes sense. That's agile, right? And you have people who understand it, and you have people who sometimes just look for the set date and where the company is going to be, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months out. I think having that background has allowed me to kind of bring some more agile practices to Reachify at every layer. And that's kind of for us, especially being small team. One thing that kind of sets us apart when you compare us to, say, some of the juggernauts is if we can listen and we can adapt faster, that's a win for our customers, right? That sets us apart in ways that big companies have a difficult time matching.
And the decision to join a startup, that cannot be an easy one, especially for an entrepreneur. Founding a startup, it's like jumping off a cliff and then midair trying to see, you know, if you actually strap on your parachute and whether it's going to open up or not, right? For you, you're joining a company that had already been founded, but still very much in startup mode. So the risk is still there. And coming from a larger company, as you mentioned, you were kind of working your way to smaller and smaller company, right? Where you're taking on more and more important roles and responsibilities. So there's an extra amount of risk involved there. What was that decision process like?
Oh, yeah. No, it's interesting, too, because it's not just a personal decision. I mean, if you have important people in your life, so, you know, I have my wife, you know, it's a complete question you ask together to, you know, every aspect of your life. You know, when I was debating quitting my corporate job to start my own company, we really didn't have much in terms of revenue. That came later on. But my now wife, then girlfriend, was the motivation I needed to help me get through that. I mean, my first year of starting my own company was very interesting. I had to work 60 hours a week at my corporate job. And then after hours, I would go home, work all the way up till 3-4 in the morning and weekends as well, putting in an extra 40 hours a week just to get the startup launched. So by the time we reached a point where it made sense to jump ship, I relied on my now wife heavily for that whole year. I know it's kind of funny. I thought it was cute. We drafted up a pseudo contract that what success would look like in a year, so we would know we wouldn't drag on forever. And lucky for me, we got to the year and we said, hey, did we do achieve all these things we wanted to? And we did. The company was profitable. It was running smoothly and it was working out for the better for both of us. So, you know, hence started my career in startups. After that, you know, joining the next startup and then this current startup, it's just a continuation from that. You know, I have, you know, some successes in my past that have helped me out. And then I've also had the stability of my wife, who's also an engineer in a managerial position at a larger company, who brings some stability where I bring a lot of variability.
There you go. So you're defining metrics even within the family too. So it is very much a family unit decision. And I'm glad that you guys are able to meet your, not only the business metrics, but the family oriented metrics as well.
Yeah, definitely. Me too.
So for Richify, the space is really quite competitive. I understand that it's really focused on selling to the SMB space. And we know that there are so many of these private practices out there. And at the same time, there are many entrenched players with deeper pockets. There's been some M&A activities. A couple of the players got gobbled up as well. How do you guys differentiate in this kind of competitive environment?
It's a great question. Yeah, Gina. So the interesting thing for us too is us being in unified communication, it's such a huge buzzword. I mean, it's existed for a long time and it's even getting re-envisioned right now as we speak by a lot of the juggernauts out there. That said though, you know, there's a difference, right? Like who we sell against depends on what aspect of your platform you're talking about. I mean, we take care of VoIP services. So we go up against telecom. We handle SMS. So when we talk about text enablement, we go against some of the major players there that do specifically just that. And then we also have the aspect of live chat. So there's a whole host of companies that are solely dedicated in deep in live chat and analytics all around that. We may not have the depth of features, but our breadth allows for the small company to not only have it all under one umbrella, but have a simple, unified experience that they can digest, train, and just understand more effectively than if they had to do it in four or five different locations. So, I mean, differentiating ourselves is really trying to do that piece, more of an education piece when we're on a demo call as to why we allow you to do what, you know, a whole suite of platforms allow you to do, but simply and more effectively. On top of that, and one thing I mentioned already, being a startup, taking that input in, even recalibrating who we are as a platform and adding new features, we can do that more freely. I'll say this, you know, there was a period from when I met you until now, which has just been less than half a year, where we added live chat and SMS enablement, two core aspects of our platform, all within a month period. And, you know, changed the landscape for us and changed basically who we were. So we adjust quite often, but also with a purpose.
That's right. Being agile is one of the competitive advantages of being in a startup, right? You can just change on a dime when you sense that the market has a certain need or is evolving in a certain way. You don't have to comedian to a death. You can just get together and say, hey, can we build something or can we prototype something and see if our customers can really receive it positively. And then we turn on the switch and go. I think that's the exciting thing in startups, right? That captivates people, especially from the corporate world where a lot of times you bring up an idea, it's either not heard or you have to go through so many committees. By the time, you know, you get through the committees, really the wind has blown, has changed directions, right? And you still can't quite, you know, get something, you know, on the ground. But on the flip side, in a startup, your budget is naturally way smaller, right? So you have to work way smarter in order to maximize your budget and make it work. So how do you manage to reach such a huge SMB segment with a startup budget?
Yeah, it's not easy. I'll tell you that much. And, you know, I don't think you ever solve that problem completely. I think you're always searching. So tried, you know, I imagine what everyone else out there has also tried before. There's multiple ways to do that. I mean, one of the best ways is marketing. We're trying to get our name out there. You can imagine that every marketing channel out there has probably been saturated and there's competitors galore everywhere, but trying to find that unique message and actually entice people and educate them to understand how we're different, that's important. And the other way is channels. I mean, we, as a communication platform, we're perfectly suited for integrations, and integrations is a strong part of, you know, what we want to keep adding as we evolve as a company. Each integration isn't just about how technically feasible it is. It's also about, well, what is the market if we integrate? How easy is it to reach the customers who are part of that integration? Say we're reaching out to a CRM or an EHR or maybe a practice management or a scheduling platform. All of them provide a different business opportunity, a different type of partnership, and different types of access to marketing, either, you know, through conferences or pay to play, whatever it is. We take all of that into consideration. So we try to maximize not only our dollars, but our development time and everything in between to just make sure that we're hitting every opportunity we can effectively.
Now, have you ever had to adjust your go-to-market strategy in order to hit a sweet spot or a sweeter spot?
Yes. And this has been the classic back and forth internally. If you talk to our director of operations, Paul, or developer Ryan, or anyone here, sales guy Ryan, they'll know we always go back and forth. Do we win a vertical? Do we win a little niche? Or do we go to the broader market? And it's always our classic back and forth. We've had success going specifically after, you know, the healthcare and health and wellness space. I mean, our company was founded by a doctor for doctors who built this because he saw a problem with his medical spa. I mean, he just didn't have a solution that fit. So we thought, you know, there we go. But then when we step back and we do marketing, we have everything from plumbers to insurance companies, startups, wide gamut of customers that stumble upon us and are interested. So with each one of those, you know, the question is, you know, how do we reach more like them? And often if you try to, you know, tackle plumbers and health and wellness at the same time, you can't use the same message. It's a different way to entice them to be interested.
Now, given your background as a CTO, I very much want to drill down further on product design and how that can be a competitive advantage of yours in terms of what you bring to the company as well as the company itself. And so one of the famous philosophies of Steve Jobs is that product design is marketing, right? He's obviously very famous for leading Apple's design, even in terms of typography, right? When he looks at font, when he looks at how things are being displayed on the screen, spares no expense when it comes to attention to detail. Of course, you know, as a startup, not every startup can be like, oh, I'm going to spend millions of dollars trying to figure out how the H should work. Should I use Helvetica or should I use Arial? But if we're talking about product design and how very well designed UI, UX, or just the experience in general, the workflow can very much help you sell the product, right? Therefore, it is part of marketing. It helps you with word of mouth when people are so satisfied. Tell me a little bit more about your journey and as you switch your role from CTO to CEO, and now you're picking up the flag, right? And you're saying, okay, now I'm going to lead the company a certain way. You may highlight certain philosophies that have worked before. And maybe polish others that can receive some improvements. So tell me a little bit more about that journey.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And it has been an evolution even for me personally. I know right now already being at Reachify, I feel a lot more comfortable with this. But back early in my days, often, you know, you fall into that engineering mindset. And I'll touch on that in a bit. But it's a little bit of, you know, breaking the way I'm comfortable with things and stepping out of a comfort zone. But product design has been huge for us. I'll say this much. Even when I was here early on, one of the big questions was, what is the product ready? And also, is it easy to use? And, you know, there's like in some startups, there's a bit of a history. And the history with Reachify is there were probably a few waves of a few, you know, leadership positions that were kind of leading the charge on product at some point. Mm-hmm. And at each iteration, you know, it's easy for individuals to fall into, hey, I think this is what the market needs. And before you really get out there and sell it, you're not going to really know what the market needs. So since I've taken over, I mean, we've actually took a stab at creating a sales team. We've not only have an account executive, but, you know, sales development reps and growing a team. So we're getting that feedback. But early on, you know, our product in its initial state, we thought maybe it wasn't quite as intuitive as we needed to be. So we were going to A/B test almost a full refactor of the front end that kind of went to this whole compact view is what we were calling it. So instead of a full desktop size interaction, it's a little compact window that's less in your way, easy to work side by side with whatever else you have open. And it was going to redefine how the whole user experience was. Well, that was all great. And, you know, we thought we'd get some great feedback. Also along that journey, we realized, hey, our main product, its navigation might not be as intuitive based on some common UX patterns. So maybe we just adjusted a little in the interim until we get compact view out. Well, we did that. We got great feedback. People loved it. It was way more intuitive. And now compact view, which we put some time into, all but disappeared. It just goes to show you, like, sometimes the simple changes can go a long way. And sometimes addition by subtraction is something that's very powerful that people should think about, maybe even first and foremost. You might have a product out there that you're inheriting, something that might be already pretty mature, but sometimes, you know, every feature, every bell and whistle is just another aspect that needs to be tested, another aspect that needs to be developed and accounted for when a new feature is incorporated. And the more you can simplify, not only does it make it easier for your users, it makes it easier for your development. It makes it easier for you to sell. You have a product that you can just put on in a demo and people get it in a glance, that helps you sell. And that's really what happened. When we changed the way our product was kind of broken out in terms of its inboxes, we had something that just kind of made sense at first glance. And that made a pretty significant difference for us.
I really love the concept of addition by subtraction that you were mentioning. It's very true, especially when a product becomes more mature. There tends to be a certain level of bloat, right? And it's really an art and a science to be able to say, okay, I'm going to trim this, and have the determination to say, okay, yes, this is worth trimming. And by trimming it, we are in fact making it better. And it's just so hard to do because people have spent a lot of time. And I'm sure within the team, there will be people who are really just embracing that particular feature or that particular workflow. And it's hard for them to say, oh, yeah, we're going to give it away because it was once their baby. That is very difficult. And it's very difficult as a leader to get the team behind it, right? So in terms of customer feedback, you mentioned that a little bit. Sometimes customer feedback could be, wow, it's just dead on. And you listen to it, you're like, wow, we incorporate this, it's going to give us much better product market fit. This is it. Other times it really would be relatively extraneous. And sometimes it's very individualized. It's not really what the market wants. And how do you balance the two when it comes to taking that feedback, synthesizing it, and then translating that into possible adjustments?
Oh, yeah, you hit it right on the head. The biggest thing, and what I call it is the feedback loop, is you don't want to take everything initially and make it a file, right? Mm-hmm. At any given day, any person can walk in, whether it's your sales, your customer success individual, and say, this is it. This is a fire. We need to address this. And sometimes they are, and sometimes they aren't. I love every bit of feedback any customer gives us. And I'm not saying any of it is good or bad, but sometimes it's just not maybe part of the DNA of your company, right? Like if you're a communication platform, mm-hmm. all of a sudden just to throw in, say, something along the lines of, hey, we're going to do, I don't know, we're going to do social chat, or we're going to do a social site, we're going to be a Facebook competitor. It's not really who we are. We're going to stay kind of true to communication. So that's what we're looking for. But that said, the feedback loop, I like to say that there's a certain level of trend analysis you're looking for, right? And it all starts with everyone's buy-in to document, whether it's in your CRM, your support desk, your Reachify account. You need to make sure you document who and why and what, and that way you can look back at periodic reviews. I mean, I'd like to say there's some magic system that kind of does it for you, but a lot of it is just the human element of us kind of piecing it together, making sure we understand. We can say when two things are similar, because sometimes feedback comes across as two different feature requests, but the goal is the same. How do you help your customers by deciphering what they're asking for and seeing the trends of, yes, this seems like it's a wider problem than we realized, a wider request than we realized, and a great opportunity for us to help everyone that we're trying to empower.
So have you really seen how better product design has given you an edge in the sales process? Has customer kind of told you, oh, you know, I was in this demo and by seeing how things work, I want to buy it now. Are you really seeing the effect of that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, I don't have the exact numbers, but our demos used to take a lot longer and probably with a few more questions at the end. And now it's more of a 10 minutes and I get it. You know, and if you get it, you're either ready or it's not what works for you. But more often than not, they get it and they see the value. I think that's the value of an intuitive UI and of a platform that makes sense and is simple. It's hard enough to be on the other end of the phone. I mean, one thing our sales members completely keep in mind when dealing with people who are in the SMB space, sometimes, you know, owners that are not only just managing, but also practicing what they're doing. There's only so many minutes in a day and you probably have 10 things on your mind, even when you're talking to us. So the simpler it is, the more intuitive it feels, the easier it is for people to just say, yes, that's what I'm looking for. And also with us simplifying the UI and the experience and the product as a whole, we've opened up free trials. And now with a free trial, you can allow them to step in and learn on their own to some extent on their and get it without us having to do training. And I think that's the real value. How can you get out of training and questions on simple actions that you're built to do?
Very interesting. And I absolutely agree in the sense that if you have a product that the end user simply, they would just get it, you know, when they see it. It just kind of explains, it doesn't take explaining. It makes it so much easier to sell. They can just look at it and they say, I get it. I don't need to have 10 follow-up questions and read an FAQ and have a full-on training session for my staff members to learn how to use it. It just looks like, oh, it just looks like they're going to be able to pick it up because the button's here, the other button's there. It's where they would be expected to be. It's intuitive. And I can see that that really gives you some immediate ROI in terms of shorter sales cycle and perhaps even less post-sale customer service, right, when it comes to supporting the customers.
Yes, yes. And, you know, one other thing I should touch on, too, is there's another aspect that helps sales out as well. I mean, one thing is seeing the product. The other thing is pricing. And being from a technology background, I mean, one thing I always, you know, work with our team on is how do we take, you know, our cost drivers and either implement for more efficiency or figure out alternative ways to really drive those down. I mean, anything we can do to keep our margins in a good place, but keep our pricing very aggressive, that's a win all around because, you know, you don't want to sell on price. But if you can effectively make your price more appealing and still be very profitable, that's win all around, right? The product shines, the pricing is attractive. It almost makes it so compelling, you know, you get the sense of, you know, just take my money.
That's sure. Right. Now, in a company, there are builders, and then there are those that are just natural salesmen. They wanted to sell. So there is sometimes a tug of, I don't want to say tug of war, but there's certainly a desire. Well, do we want to build first and then sell, or do we want to sell then build? I mean, even, you know, startup philosophies, we're talking about maybe we want to sell the concept first, then you go prototype, right, and actually build it. So in terms of how you guys do it, are you finding that you are maybe selling the concept and then building, or maybe building a prototype and then selling it and then, you know, try to bring it on? You know, how are you dealing with this?
Yes, this is something I've seen my entire career. It is always a touchy subject. And I know there's people on either side. I mean, and this is one of the things I think I was trying to get to eventually as well. I'm glad you brought it up. You know, being an engineer, there was a period in my life before I had my own company where I would never have been comfortable selling. Never selling. That hasn't been built and tested because, you know, your name as a developer is on that. And right. You don't want to say something can be built until you know it can be built because you built it.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you know, that all went out the window when I had my own company. And it continues to be that way even now because it's just a part of life, right? Like forward selling is a very valuable way to, in some ways, test the market.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it has to be done correctly. So that's where I think it's been more of a compromise, both internally and the team as a whole. I'm actually pretty blessed to have a team here that is really savvy, even between our developer and our head of product, who's now taking on more operations role, and as well as our sales team. They understand the balance, right? Even our sales individual helps with onboarding and customer support and just ongoing customer success. So he knows you can't just sell the nightmare or sell the dream and allow someone else to service the nightmare. So that said, like we do forward sell, but that's only because we may already have known there. We had an inkling that there's a product need, right? We might have talking about a quick prototype or some way to model it quickly and what that might look like. And, you know, following like an 80-20 rule, you know, there's probably a wide, you know, number of feature aspects you can just build that address the majority of people out there without putting in all the bells and whistles. And that might be it, right? Like you might have a first few initial sales that don't go as well because you find out some of those bells and whistles aren't just bells and whistles, but that's the iterative process of it. You might still close some deals and realize you're onto something. So we've done a good job in trying to gauge whether it's feasible, maybe have a plan. If we do forward sell, we test the waters and say, okay, you know, there's interest. Let's start at it while we continue on the sales cycle and finalize deals. But we never try to forward sell something that's too big, more than we can.
So do you find that sometimes it might be a bit more difficult to do that in the SMB space versus enterprise? And what I'm thinking is, I mean, if you forward sell to an enterprise, it could be one or two deals and it will be big enough to where you can really fund the development process, right?
Yep.
But in an SMB, the price point is going to be lower and there needs to be more unit. And sometimes the people that are decision makers, they may be the owner of the practice or a wellness center or either an office manager or a practice manager. They are already wearing multiple hats as opposed to an enterprise. It may, you know, the downside would be, hey, they may have to gather a whole committee to meet with you to see if there's value. But on the other hand, there could very well be somebody who's dedicated in looking at the product, looking at the technology, so they can devote time. So do you find that it's actually an advantage or maybe disadvantage or maybe, you know, easier or harder to do that in the SMB space?
You know, I think there's pluses and minuses, right? The sales cycle is a lot shorter. And when you talk about being agile, you're truly agile. It's just the number of opportunities that present itself. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more, right? There's a lot more SMBs out there, a lot more people to get your product in front of, and it's easier to learn and grow. And sometimes, you know, it's not that we'll, you know, we think SMBs, the only place we're going to work with, right? You know, there's always, actually we are, you know, working with some larger companies as well. And there it's very similar. We demo the same product. We talk about, you know, where we fit, but they may just have extra needs such as an API, something that we may have to build. Now that's one area where I might not forward sell. I mean, there's no fooling someone to say you have a full API and it's not there.
Right.
And, you know, with the larger customers and the enterprise, if they see the product for what it is and you can work out a schedule for when you're going to provide what's required, you know, often you get into a good dialogue and set the relationship up on the right tone. And you'll often find as a startup, you're probably more nimble and a little faster than larger companies.
Absolutely.
You can call it forward selling if you want, but you don't have it, you'll build it probably before you hit your first review.
So. That's right. You're already at that milestone. You're kind of waiting there and sipping your cup of tea and waiting for them to kind of catch up and take a look, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but the SMBs, they move fast. I mean, we have conversations that are same day closes and sign me up and get me started tomorrow. So that's where, you know, we try to be really aware of the needs of the SMBs and make sure that we're in a position to help them succeed.
So today, do you find that because you're selling a unified communication platform, are you seeing that you're using a foot in the door strategy? You're selling one piece, or are you replacing multiple? And so are you kind of in the replacement market as opposed to just completely, you know, blank slate, which I would imagine many years ago it would be when VoIP systems were not common or not as common and they did not have these patient notification schedulers, texting systems around. So what stage would you say you guys are in right now?
Well, I mean, and that's a interesting question you ask, because, you know, the answer is yes to both. I mean, we offer a phone system, and if you were to visit our site, you'd probably see like different tiers in our pricing plans. Really, like, the upper end includes a VoIP system, which means, you know, we come in and replace your existing phone provider, while, you know, some of the other tiers, you're just integrating into us, into whatever you're doing right now. So if there's the live chat or the internal chat or the SMS enablement of your existing business line or the e-fax or the HIPAA compliant secure messaging, mm-hmm. all of those just baked into our platform would just be a net addition to what you're already doing today, just opening up what you're doing. I mean, really what we find is with a lot of our customers, we generally are at least replacing the tools they use for their existing channels, be it email and phone, and tagging on new ones they just didn't have previously. So that's where the SMS and the live chat and all the other ones just kind of come in. But if you start with this just from one of the base packages, we can get you up and running in a day with none of the scary telecom porting process that so many people have grown to fear.
Now, many technical founders, because of their knowledge being so solid and the technical aspect of it, the sales side is where sometimes they find it challenging. And for you guys, you know, you guys already have a team put together, a sales team, marketing team, and so forth. But still, selling is always the challenging thing, right? You can build it and, you know, and they will come kind of concept, you know, doesn't really work. You gotta attract those eyeballs, right? Right now, the world and the marketplace is so noisy. You gotta have some ways to get their attention, either book a demo or whatever, because that's the point where your product can speak for itself, right? If it's really a great product, you know, if they don't come, they're never going to be able to discover. So are you using cold calling? Are you doing like B2B, social media? What kind of tricks are you able to do to stretch your marketing dollar further?
Yeah, and selling, that is interesting too. Like we really as a team collectively lean on each other's experiences to make sure we do this correctly. But it's a little bit of everything. I mean, there's marketing right now that we're doing to try to, you know, make sure we not only distinguish us against, say, some of the people who people may think are our competitors, and explain how we're different or how much more value you get. There is the cold calling aspect too. I mean, that in a lot of spaces just work really well. But if you go to healthcare, I mean, healthcare, they might also lend themselves to mailers. I mean, there's a whole gamut of different things that, you know, we've considered and we've looked at. But, you know, just to get started, we've gone some of the traditional routes and they seem to pan out. Working with channel partners as well, going to conferences, like there's a lot you can do to not only get your brand out there, but to just get a flurry of interest in a hurry. And that's really what we're looking to do. I will say this, there's a certain value to cold calling. It allows you to focus on a very specific message and really fine tune that. And then there's marketing, which also helps you test other things, which is where your reach may be outside of the few markets that you are working on. So a combination of both allows us to really get a sense of how we win a niche, but also where else we can play, which is, you know, always really valuable for any company to figure out.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Sometimes very old school traditional ways would work. You know, practically all of these medical centers would still have a fax machine. That's still part of their workflow. So who knows? Sending a good old fax may actually reach them better because they're going to read it. Oh, is it a referral? Oh, it's not. It's actually about Richify. That could work, right? That cuts through the noise right there.
Yeah. And you'll be surprised. Sometimes just relationships and good old door to door. I mean, one thing, you know, we do have doctors who are, you know, associated with the company, and they're, you know, people who have succeeded by using us. So spreading the word just helps a lot.
Now, that brings us to our very last question. If you can get a power up that supercharges your ability, like that in a video game, what would you supercharge as a CEO?
I don't know. Is being able to see the future count, or is that cheating?
I guess, you know, this time-space continuum, there might just be a time-space continuum potion somewhere as a power-up.
Well, maybe let's call that one cheating because it's a little too good. How about cloning? There never feels like there's enough hours in the day. If I can get another me and another of some of my – if I could just clone my team for a day.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Maybe even I can go hit the beach a little while the other me kind of runs things or something else.
There you go. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Zeal. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. And it was a great conversation.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Beating Goliath. I hope you were able to get some useful takeaways. If you think of a guest that's perfect for our interview series, or if you have any comments, I would love to hear from you. Just search for Joyce Tang San Diego on LinkedIn. So now, go kick some butts.